This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your own home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
Woo-wee! Let this one breathe. 5 p.m. on a Friday afternoon in Toronto. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. Brian Hazy, O-Dog, Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles, McLennan. Guest-free Friday on Overdrive, and we love it. We love it.
It is. I mean, Craig Conroy sent me a text saying, sorry, buddy. I had it, you know, had it written down at 2:45. He's in Calgary. You're right. Like, it's not like people aren't sitting around. Like, we legitimately, the whole world is sitting around by their phones. Like, if this isn't the most, like, if you call somebody or text them and they don't get back to you, it means
they're
absolutely
ignoring you.
Yeah, they're flushing you. Like, they can't be like, sorry, I was, you know, I was at a movie, I was, you know, like, everyone is sitting around doing nothing.
Yeah, that's a good point. If you're getting ghosted right now, that person really doesn't like you or is sending a message, right? Like, I guess there's a possibility you're sleeping or you've got kids or you're on the other line. Like, there's always something that can come up.
Have you guys not? That's the one thing I have not even touched, because just the, like, no napping at all.
Oh, really?
I've been napping in the morning.
Really?
Yeah, I've been napping because we get the young kids, man. We're up all night anyway. They get me up early. So my routine, not every day, but when the baby goes down for a nap, let's say it's like 10 a.m., usually,
done.
Yeah, we're on the couch. We might throw on the TV for the first time for the oldest one, and it's like I got an hour, and I'm going to fade for 45, and I try to. Because I'm up all night, and I'm up in the morning, and I feel like we got to have some energy for 4 o'clock. Oh, we should have energy, but
and it's a long day if you don't get that nap in. You're right. Like we got a 2.5-year-old. He got out of naps. Now he's back into them.
You gotta have it.
I'll lay down with him, and I'm gone for 30 minutes. Today I didn't because of this damn tractor that I'm staring at right now. I just want to scissor kick it.
Well, but for people that don't have kids, I do recommend later nights. So it's a sleep in and a later wake up. And then, like, for the people that are saying the days just take forever to go by, you're getting up a lot later, and then you're just having a late breakfast, late lunch, and then it seems like it's nighttime like that. It's just a...
But what are you doing at night? What can you do? How are you killing time at night? What's the point of killing time at night if you can't kill it in the morning or in the afternoon?
Well, I just find that me and my wife just we lie in bed on Netflix till wee hours of the morning, and then it's like a late go to bed, a late wake up, and it's just like you're not looking at daylight for you're not saying, "Oh, this day's taking forever."
Right. Well, I want to thank everyone at The Athletic because they came up with a great idea. Myrtle and company. There were a bunch of different people involved in this. Blake Murphy, Stoughton was involved, Sean Fitzgerald, Josh Clokey. They were all involved in this. They put forth the first 25 inductees into The Athletic Toronto's inaugural Sports Hall of Fame. So basically the 25 players from the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, TFC, Argos that would go into the Toronto Sports Hall of Fame. And the reason I want to thank them is it's a good idea, and we'll get into it in a moment, but they did not have Wendell Clark in their top 25.
What?
You're kidding me.
I'm not kidding you. So I have taken a beating for years because I put forth a list that was very specific and very detailed about how I was supposed to put forth that list. And I made the mistake of not including Wendell Clark, and I still to this day regret that decision. I fought against it as long as I could. Now I admit it was wrong. It was stupid. I love Wendell, and I'm disappointed in myself that I didn't have him in my top 25. But now I'm not alone. These voters at The Athletic here in Toronto, somehow they don't have Wendell Clark in the top 25.
Well, was it 25 of Leafs, 25 Raptors?
No, 25? No. And that's probably what makes it complicated. Like, you're dealing with Robbie Alomar's in there, Bautista, Lowry.
Well, hold on a second.
Pinball, it's all Toronto athletes, guys that played here.
How would Joey Batts be ahead of Wendell Clark?
Well, I guess if you
tell me that, you give me some
I'm just saying, like,
that.
I mean, maybe I'm completely off base here, but, like, Joey Batts didn't deliver a championship, not that Wendell did. Like, I don't know. I would personally have Wendell ahead of Joey Batts. Now, I was at the bat flip game, and I thought he was fantastic, but to me, Wendell was a better player than Joey Batts was at his job.
I don't know if he was a better player. I don't think you. That's a tough question. I mean, I think they were maybe in the same boat. I think Bautista might have been better. I mean, Bautista was a legitimate MVP candidate. Wendell was never in the heart conversation, but Wendell's more beloved here. Like, as Bautista is loved in Toronto, Wendell is a true god in Toronto.
Do you have the list? Because we'll get after it all afternoon long.
Yes, I do. And you do have to remember, again, like, they've got, like, Michael Bradley in there, which Bradley's a great member of TFC. Joe Vinko's in there. Those guys wouldn't actually be ahead of a guy like Wendell or any of the big three teams because they just don't have the same following and they're not – you know, they don't get the same attention in the city because their teams are not at the same level of fan base. But, like, Bradley's been a great member of TFC, a great member of the sports town, and he's been here for a championship, so I'm not against that. The point I'm making is they clearly had a directive, like, okay, we got to get some TFC players in, we got to get some Argos in, like, Pinball's in there, which I would expect. Pinball is definitely a top 25 member of the Toronto Sports Hall of Fame. Because he continues to play a massive role in the city. But we'll go over it. We'll get Ray on here in just a moment. But, okay, so we got Ray. Ray Ferraro. Here's Ray, our TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. What's up, Ray?
I'm watching Tiger Woods chip right now. He looks like he's practicing somewhere. He's got, like, 20 balls, and he's hitting the same chip a whole bunch of different ways.
Could you imagine if it was live and somebody was spying on him in his backyard? Like, is that and it was live on the Golf Channel. Like, I could see something like that.
Well, the crazy part here is, like, so he's like right on the fringe of the green, and he's hitting with a wedge, and he's got, like, a sand wedge, and he flips one way up in the air, he hits another one low, he hits a two bouncer, and I'm like, man, I love that stuff, like the ability to do different things. I got one shot from there. I bump it and hope it hits a pin, and then I go get it and try and putt it.
Yeah, that is a sign. I mean, Tiger's the greatest of all time, but even the guy that's, like, you know, ranked 250th in the world, further down the list, the 5,000th best golfer on earth can sit there with a basket of balls and basically chip it within 5 feet almost from anywhere.
All day long.
Yeah, all day long.
And they're doing it a bunch of different ways, too. That's the part that I'm really intrigued with. Like, I'm sure they could all hit the same chip, you know, the little bump and run or whatever, and they could play it in tight, and they could do that all day, but he's flipping it up in the air, he's hitting it low, he's making it bounce twice, like his hands are just, they're the best, right? So, like, I guess it would probably be like watching anybody do what they do, you know, if you do it casually and you watch the best of all time do it, you'd go, oh my God, look at what he's doing. I can't do that, even though I sort of kind of play the same thing.
Well, that's where the hackers and slashers, they see these gimmicks on TV, whether it be the SK7, but they want a driver to hit it 10 yards longer. They want better irons. If they don't figure out how to learn how to chip and putt and figure it out around the green, they blow so many shots around the green, it's ridiculous.
Well, our pro had a great line. He's like, everybody wants to buy the new $600 driver, but nobody wants to spend $600 on lessons. He's like, you can have the best equipment. Like, if you don't know how to use it, what the hell's the difference? I was like, pretty good point.
Well, is there a bigger risk or reward shot for a chop than the flop shot around the green? Because if you make it work, like if you actually connect and you look like Mickelson, you're like, everyone's astounded. But there is a 95% chance you're going to skull that 150 meters past the hole.
There is nothing more uncomfortable than seeing a guy that knows he can't chip and he's got to pull out a wedge. I mean, the guy will putt from 15 yards into the rough if he has to.
That's my move. If I'm within 60 yards, the putter is coming out.
I know, but there's dudes that'll do it in the rough. They will take a shot with the putter from the rough from 40 yards away. It's like, and you know, when they get some kind of lob wedge on their hands, they are sticking that thing in the ground and folding the earth over the golf ball, and it is going nowhere.
Okay, but what about when you see a guy with his flop wedge, and he's taking some practice swings, and, you know, he's right, he's got to chip it over a bunker to a tight pin.
No.
And you're like, he's not capable of this.
No.
But he's taken that big swing, and you're standing across the green, and you're like, I can't stand here. He's gonna hit this like a 2-iron right through my chiclets if I don't move here.
Yeah. No, he's burying it into the lip of the bunker for sure.
Just sculling a 64 degree.
Right on the forehead. Right on the forehead.
Yeah.
Into the lip of the bunker.
There is no worse feeling especially when you're actually you like tee to green, you feel good. It's a par 5 and you're just off the green and in 2. And you're like, I can lob something up here, and I have a real birdie opportunity. And you walk off like with a triple because you skull one onto the next green, and then you're chopping it back to the green.
What goes it's through my head, though, Hayes, is like I see the guy. You know, he's one of your buddies you play, and he's working on this, again, over the bunker to a tight pin, and he's working on his practice swing. And all I can think of in my head is, he's missed this shot 42 times in a row. I don't know why he thinks he's going to make it this time.
Right.
Let's just chip it into the middle of the green and two putt and then get the hell out of there. But you got to wait, and you're like, and then he sculls it and it goes like a rocket over the green. And he goes, damn, I thought I had that one.
No,
oh,
you didn't, did you?
Yeah. You've never had it. Not once in your life have you had it. Why would you have that one? I remember years ago, I played with a pro. It was a long time ago. And he was an older guy, but he shot like 73. Just par, par, par. He bogeyed one hole. 17 pars, one bogey. He's like 70 years old, but he was money. And I was in the trees, and I had the balls to say, I think I got a shot. Like it was probably the size of 3 golf balls that I had to sneak this thing through with like a 5-iron to have a shot at the green. And he just walked over to me and said, why don't you just chip it out? Like, it just so calm. He's like, don't hit that shot because you can't hit that shot. Chip it out to the middle of the fairway and play for a bogey. Because if you try that shot, you're going to triple. I guarantee it. And sure enough, I adhered to his advice. I chip it out. I think I walked away with a 5 or whatever. Meanwhile, if I tried that shot, it would have gone off 25 different trees, back into the junk. I'd have to take a stroke. But if he wasn't there, I would have tried it. Like, that's the point you're making.
If you ever want to see something, look at the Texas Open. Kevin Na got into the woods.
Oh,
the best.
Did he get 14?
He made a 17, I think. He kept slashing and hacking and whacking it like a 20 handicap, and his caddy was like, what the hell did you make there? He's like, I don't know, but I think it's like a 17. You have to YouTube that if you want to see a hack and slash in the woods. Like
his caddy was actually embarrassed. Like,
yeah.
for himself as a caddy.
Of course.
Like, he's like, I have to write this down on the card that this guy just chopped around us. It was a par 3, wasn't it?
Because he knows he's losing money, that's why.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
It was a par 4, but it was just a mess.
Okay. Well, anyway, all right, good to hear that Tiger's, you know, offering you up some sort of entertainment, because there's not much going today. Well, that's an interesting question. Like, if everyone's playing throwbacks, every channel's got the best of going, is there one athlete, if you could only pick one, you could see him at his best, would it be Tiger for you? Would it be someone else? Who would you pick?
Oh, boy. Probably Tiger, I would say. Like, I watched one thing that had him, that highlights of the U.S. Open that he won by, I don't know, 14 or 15. He's like minus 12. The guy in second place is plus 5.
Right.
And I'm like, he's just like beating the crap out of everybody. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm amazed by something like that. I'd probably want to watch, if I could, like an old no-hitter. Like, we're like in a pressure spot that some guy just mows everybody down. I love the pressure stuff. Like, I think that's the fun stuff to watch.
Yeah, that I was thinking that too. If I could find a no-hitter that I've never seen before, it would take away from the experience knowing that he's going to achieve it.
Mm-hmm.
But still, watching someone, like, go back and watch Halliday's no-hitter in the NLDS.
Okay,
who's the grit grinder
who was,
who's the grit grinder who was buckled the night before?
David Wells, perfect game.
Like, I remember it a little bit, but like, I would love to go back now, knowing what I know from his book and all that, to actually see if there was any signs that this guy was dying on the mound.
There was a guy, Doc Ellis, who threw a no-hitter in the 70s. And Turns out he was wasted. He walked eight and hit like six guys, and he threw a no-hitter. And he was out to, he was, I don't know what he had taken, I forget, but he was out to lunch.
Yeah.
He walked eight guys and hit six and threw a no-hitter.
It was like
I'd like to watch that.
It was like a psychedelic drug, too. Like, it was this guy, it was heavy. Like, you're doing time if you get caught with this thing. But those are the best no-hitters. A.J. Burnett has a no-hitter. I think he walked nine guys. And it's like, does that even count? Like,
no,
I think he may have, I think he might have, honestly, he might have given up a run. Like a no-hitter where he walked the bases loaded and then hit a guy, but, you know, ends up winning like 3-1, and technically it's a no-hitter, but I don't think you can hang your hat on that.
Now, Hayes, you would might, I don't know if the, if, oh, if, or Noodles, if you guys remember Mike Hampton.
Yes.
And he had a couple of unreal years. He threw in, he came back, he blew out his arm, and then he came back with the Mets. He had signed
a lefty?
Yes. He's thrown this $120 million deal in Colorado. Mm-hmm. He comes back with the Mets, and he's got a no-hitter going. And the manager decided, I guess, I don't know, talk to him. They left him in. He threw a 130-pitch no-hitter. That was the end of his career. Done. Finished. His arm just fell off.
Yeah. Santana did the same thing. Remember Johan Santana with the when he went back to the Mets, I think it was.
Yeah.
And it was the same. His arm, it was a noodle. Like, he had nothing.
Didn't he throw, like, way over 100 pitches?
Way over. Because it was, like, up around 130, and it was so unhealthy. But he was so deep into his career, and he was waving off the manager. He's like, I'm not coming out. Like, I don't care if I never pitch again. I got a no-hitter here. I'm like, I'll have Tommy John tonight, but I'm completing this game.
I love it.
Yeah, because, you know, a young guy. But that's it's happened on the opposite side with younger pitchers, right? There was, I want to say, maybe opening day last year, the past couple of years, there's definitely been young guys early in the season that had no hitters that got pulled. Yeah, they took them out in like the seventh inning because they just said, you're up against your pitch count. We're not going to blow your arm out here for a no-hitter game one of the season.
Yeah, and then you look at some of the old-time pitchers, you know, like a Bob Gibson or something, and they have like 35 complete games in a year.
Yeah.
Like they just never came out.
Crazy.
And now you're like, pitch count, 77 pitches, out he comes, and you're like, oh.
Yeah. Honestly, the old guys, like the really old guys, there's some funny baseball reference pages out there, like old Haas Radburn, like back in the late 1800s, that would honestly, he'd pitch like, it would be like 400 innings a year or something crazy. Like now if you hit 200, you're a god in baseball. If you touch up against 200 innings pitched, it's a miracle. There were some guys that would hit 300. I feel like Clemens probably got there, Randy Johnson, but it's, you know, that was pushing it. But way back in the day, they'd pitch doubleheaders. Like the ace would pitch at 1 p.m. and then again at like 7 that night. 18 innings in a day. Just keep hucking it down the middle of the plate. But science has clearly changed that, and probably for the best. But
probably for the best.
Probably for the best.
Yeah,
so,
but that goes back. Sorry, Ray, Hayes.
Go ahead,
that goes back. That goes back to the, you know, those guys would drink 50 beer after and be smoking, you know, in between innings too.
Yeah.
Like, just life was different. Right?
Oh yeah, totally. So we were talking about these video chats, bunch of the players in the NHL were doing today. There were a bunch of them that connected, I think, through NHL.com or something. And there was a mixture. Some players said they feel like you've got to play regular season games. Some players said you just start the playoffs right off the bat. I guess it's too early to really know. But what I found interesting was McDavid and Giordano were in the same chat. And they were talking about, you know, the Battle of Alberta and would it be reignited immediately. And I think it would be, but I don't really have an answer. Like, let's say in 2.5 months, game one, Edmonton, Calgary, is Tkachuk running around trying to kill people? Is Cassian looking for fights? What happens?
Well, doesn't it? Well, I guess for me, I was just going to say, doesn't it seem like they've got to ramp back up to all of that?
Yeah, like this. Really,
you know, like
makes
it's going to be
mean.
Hard to just jump right in, right? And like. Like, you don't even have any, it'll be self-survival at the start. Like, guys are going to be out of shape no matter how hard they train or have a training camp, if you will. But man, you're just trying to get yourself around the ice and, you know, and try to be a decent player at that point. And I can't imagine they'd get right back to that last Calgary-Edmonton, you know, boxing match that we saw. Like, I just don't see that happening.
But I think, you know what, Ray, it would be like all of us. Like, they'd be rusty for maybe the first 22 minutes, and then, like, somebody would do something. Like, I think McDavid, you know, in reading some of the notes out of it, he said, like, it would be tough to just go out there and try and kill each other after all of this time. But he's, you know what, I could see it happening. Like, with what's at stake and everyone excited, it's just, you know, it's like riding a bike. These guys will be able to ramp it up a lot quicker than I think people think.
Yeah, I don't know, Noodles. I'm just trying to think, like, when we came back after the lockout, the first couple of weeks, and I know it was just the start, really the start of the season, right?
Right.
When we came back, but I remember it being like, it was just odd to be out there. Like, you were, like, just trying to survive, get, you know, your groins were sore, your back sore, you're just trying to get through the game. And I know it's going to, you know, it would be at a far different level because of the importance. I don't know. I think it would, well, I guess we'll, hopefully we'll find out, but I think it would be tough. Like, my personal view is it'd be a little tough to get going, to run over somebody, to, you know, I guess if you did get run over, then you're in the game and you're probably going to, now you're going to be on the hunt too, right? Like, I guess maybe that's all it takes.
It would be like a larger version. You know how sometimes during a game there's a kind of a gory injury or someone gets taken off on a stretcher? There's a real human element to it, and guys are like, do I really want to run that guy over right now? And when something like this happens, you realize there's a lot more to life than sports and hockey, and you go out there and it's like, do I really want to start this with the first couple games and going over and telling a guy I hate him and I want to rip his face off and run him through the boards? It wouldn't take that long, but that's the way I view it. It would just be a larger version of that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You actually make a great point there, because, you know, the human side, at what point do you start to feel normal out there again and normal? Yeah. You know, maybe it would take a couple games for things to kind of ramp back up.
Well,
just think of all this, though. Like, so they come back and they're going to play a few games before the playoffs or not, whatever it is. But there's going to be guys that come back, teams that come back, and play four games and they're done. It's all going to be so strange.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if they come right back to the playoffs and some team gets swept out of the playoffs, like, they're like, oh, we came back for that. That kind of sucked.
Yeah. Yeah, no kidding.
Or if they want to play a few regular season games, it's not going to be just the playoff teams. Like, you got to round up the San Jose Sharks and the Detroit Red Wings to play three games.
Good luck.
That would really suck.
Yeah, exactly.
Good luck. That's where the players and the Players Association comes into play, because we mentioned baseball and the Baseball Players Association. They've already brokered a deal on how this is going to work, when they're going to accept, you know, the guidelines to return to play, and what's going to happen if the season's just postponed, if it's canceled. And that speaks to the union. I mean, it's a strong union, and clearly the owners, I think, have learned their lesson in the past. They're like, we better call these guys, because there's no guarantee they're just going to accept our guidelines. But I would have to believe that there's a chance that will apply with the NHL and the NBA. Like, in other words, let's say it's the NHL and Bettman's like, all right, we're up and running. And McDavid or whoever is like, no, we're not. I'm not playing. Like, not playing right now. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I would think all those days are gone where you just try to unilaterally ram something through. Like, I can't imagine the leagues and the Players Association of any league wouldn't be in discussions trying to figure out the options.
Right. They should
be. Like, I think that's their only way forward now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, you would think that's common sense. I would assume it will be. But now this is different. This is the NFL where the players are not involved in the draft. But I'm sure you guys saw Roger Goodell's memo to the teams where he said the draft is ongoing the way it was supposed to, scheduled Thursday, Friday, Saturday, later in April. And at the end of the memo, he said, oh, and by the way, I don't want to see anybody publicly criticizing this decision, or you're going to be fined. You know, you're going to be reprimanded because that, by all accounts, like off the record, GMs, coaches, like they're all saying they don't think the NFL draft should be happening, or a fair amount of the NFL community has suggested they don't feel right about having the draft happen. But Goodell has decided it is, and if you don't like it, that's fine, but keep it to yourself, because if you go public, I'm going to hammer you for it.
You know, the one thing about Goodell of late, over the last couple of years, if there's two paths, and one of them is clean, and the other one is full of a Great Dane that has taken dumps down that path, he steps in every one of the Great Dane's paths.
Right.
Like, on a public relations view only, could he do anything right? Or does he look at it and go, what's the wrong way publicly to address this? Okay, I'm going to pick that one.
He's got a Trump element to him where he's just like, I'm doing it.
This guy makes $40 million a year.
$40 million sheets, right?
Yep, $40 million. Yep.
And the owners, I mean, they're the ones who, you know, voted for him to have another contract. Like, this guy, you're right. He has a little bit of a Trump element where he's like, to hell with the PR, to hell with everyone. Like, this is my show. You don't like it? Well, you know, I'm going to fine you. I'm going to do this and that. Like, this guy has zero give a, you know what?
Well, I guess
if you've made $40 million for 4 years or 5 years or whatever he's made, and they decide to fire you, you've still made the $40 million. You'll be fine.
What I enjoy about this is some owner or some GM was like, all right, fine, I won't say anything public, but this is going right to Schefter, and we're going to post this through ESPN. Like, that's the ultimate, like, back. It's basically publicizing the issue. Like, okay, fine, I won't complain, but I'm going to email this to adam.schefter@espn.com, and now you're going to have to deal with the PR because people are going to start carving you again. But anyway, I'm happy it's happening, quite frankly. I'm sure they're going to take safety measures, but in a month, if we're not playing games, and we're not going to be playing anything in a month, the NFL draft will be welcomed.
Because, of course, they wouldn't be able to have all the fans in there, right? I will miss the selection of a player that the fans don't know, but they don't know because he's an offensive lineman. They don't know who the hell they are, and they're just outraged, and they're smacking their own heads, and they're in their face paint. I will miss those scenes.
It's the best. It honestly is the best. They have no idea, but they've all collectively made up their mind that one player is the guy they're supposed to take, because Mel Kiper's been saying it for 3 months. And then when their team takes someone else who turns out to be a great player, because it almost invariably happens, they're still booing. And that's fans, man. I've seen fans, and I'm not surprised by this, but people in New England turning on Brady, hating on Tom Brady. How could you possibly leave after 20 years and 6 Super Bowls and the greatest run in the history of the National Football League? People are going to hate on Brady because he left.
And they can cheer for their new guy, and they might miss Tom.
I feel like they probably will. And have a great weekend, buddy. Great stuff all week, and we'll keep trucking here, man. We'll do it again Monday at 5.
Yeah, everybody have a good weekend. You guys look after yourselves. We'll talk to you Monday.
There he is, Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, and joining us on the Maple Toyota hotline. Again, the website, mapletoyota.com. We have a 4-pack of audio battles ongoing, courtesy of the Overdrive Madness Bracket. You can vote on Twitter @Overdrive1050 or on Instagram @TSN1050. We will play a couple of those coming up. Mark Shapiro will join us in about a half an hour, and we'll get back into the article up on The Athletic, the 25 members going into the Toronto Sports Hall of Fame. We'll see who was in, who was out, and who we would put in if you could only put in one player that played on a Toronto team this century. One player over the past 20 years. Who would that one guy be? We'll get to that next. All right, we'll get to our Overdrive Madness bracket a little bit later in the hour. Mark Shapiro will join us in about a half an hour. So I mentioned this article in The Athletic that I think is a creative idea, quality idea, the Toronto Sports Hall of Fame. So they've inducted 25 members into the Toronto Sports Hall of Fame, and all 5 teams are represented. So the Maple Leafs, the Raptors, the Blue Jays, TFC, and the Argos, And these are always difficult to do because, you know, how are we supposed to talk or vote on players that played for the Argos in 1910, you know, or the Maple Leafs in the 1930s? It's difficult. And, like, one guy that I don't think gets brought up enough in Toronto that truly I think he is a legend for older fans but should be a name that every Maple Leaf fan is aware of is George Armstrong, who played every single game in the NHL as a Maple Leaf. 21 years as a Leaf, almost 1,200 games. He was the captain for 13 years. I believe he won, what did he win, 4 cups or 5 cups? And he's not on this list either. And he's not a guy that I think gets nearly enough attention, but he probably should. But in terms of, you know, recent history, let's talk about the past 20 years. If we're looking at the one guy that would have to go into the Toronto Sports Hall of Fame, one guy that played for one of these teams over the past 20 years, do you have one guy in mind?
I do. It's Kyle Lowry.
I totally agree. That was the guy I was thinking.
He brought the championship to a sport where it's like the Canadian team, the little engine that could, nobody wants to play here, blah, 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 and he brought a championship here. I know it's a lot about Kawhi Leonard and supporting cast, but he's the guy who almost got traded to the Knicks. He was out of shape when he got here, blah, 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 and he turned it around and brought a NBA championship to this city.
Well, that's I think it's Kawhi. Like, I mean, I know it's only one season, but like that championship, and you're just talking the last 20 years, that doesn't appear here in Toronto. That's not even a sniff in Toronto if Kawhi doesn't land in Toronto. Like Lowry, real nice, you know, like I love him. I like, he's got jam, and he's been a Raptor and a for me, kind of like a classy Raptor, you know, through thick
and thin. Yeah, an ambassador for the team, wants to be here, loves the city.
But
second
they failed.
For me
like
would be
DeRozan.
Robbie Alomar.
Yeah, but DeRozan's on that list. They never had success. I mean, they had great regular season success. They didn't, like, to me, Kawhi should be on that list. I know people would be like, oh, it was only one season.
Yeah, well, I believe he is. I think Kawhi is on the list. And
I looked at it. I didn't see it. Sorry,
yeah,
I've overseen it.
He did. He was on the list, and he should be on the list. I agree with you in terms of the top 25, but I think, yeah, Kawhi's on the list. Blake Murphy, he was the one voting, you know, courtesy of the Raptors slant for the Athletic. But I think Lowry is the answer. I was thinking about throwing out the idea of the one guy from that's played in the city over the past 20 years, the one guy who's played here the last decade, or the one guy who's playing here right now. And I think it's all the same answer. It's Kyle Lowry, because Lowry is, in my opinion, the greatest Raptor of all time, but also holds the elusive ring. And also is a guy in a league that a lot of times they left. You know, the best player would leave. The best Blue Jays come and go, but a lot of them stayed here for a long, long time. Halliday was here for a long time. Delgado was here for a long time. There were a number of guys, Bautista, et cetera. The Leafs,
traditionally,
the same
thing. Kyle Lowry is like, okay, it's time for me to go play for the Lakers.
Yes.
Or the 76ers, or my time's up here. Thanks for giving me an avenue to go somewhere else. Just like everyone before him, and he stuck it out, and he stayed.
Yes, so I totally agree with you, O. I think everything you laid out is appropriate. I would go Lowry 1. I'd go Sundin 2, and I would go Bautista 3. Like, those would be my three guys, one from each of the big three teams, Lowry, Sundin, Bautista. I think all three of them were the faces of their team. All three of them were the heart and soul of their team. All three of them were long tenured. They had success. Sundin went to 2 different conference finals. Bautista played in 2 different ALCS. And obviously Lowry, we know what he did last year. So I think those would be the three guys for me. You know,
I would go Lowry, Killer, Josh Donaldson.
Yeah, there was a debate. I mean, Donaldson-Bautista is an interesting one because Donaldson was here for a shorter period of time but made a bigger impact.
Yeah, if you're not going to win a championship, you won an MVP in Major League Baseball. That's
yeah.
Every
that's
time he
to
came
it,
to the
yeah.
plate for 2 summers, it was MVP, MVP, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think you can go wrong. And Donaldson is in the top 25 with the Athletic. You know, it gets a little bit difficult to navigate through because you can tell they need TFC players, they need Argo players, and those guys are not held to the same esteem collectively throughout the city. They are for their respective fan bases, like Michael Bradley, Joe Vinko. Those are two great members of our city's sports scene. pinball.
I would have
Clemens.
Taken Jovinko off just because of the way he left.
Yeah, but he was Donaldson, right? To Bradley's Bautista. Like Jovinko was the greatest, probably the greatest player in MLS history, or close to it. And what he did, and like they don't win without Jovinko. Like he was so good. He was so dominant. When he came and he started putting on a clinic, he put TFC on the map. Like it was the year before where they brought in, you know, some bigger pieces like Bradley came aboard, Altidore came aboard, Dupree, was it Dupree? I'm forgetting his name. But they brought him over from the EPL. But it was Jovinko when he showed up and started rolling when TFC, like, truly took that next step. But there's, like I said earlier, Wendell Clark is not in the top 25.
That's
and
a
I
joke,
wanna,
man.
I want to thank them for not including him because I thought I was the only Yahoo that didn't do that in the past.
You know who's in there is Borgi Salming.
Yeah. Salming should be in there. But, again, that's a different era. But when he was rolling in the 70s and 80s, he was a king, man. Like, he was – I talk to my dad about him all the time. My dad loved Salming. Like, if you were a Leaf fan in the 70s and 80s, he was the man. He was the man. Like, he was on the same level as Sittler and, you know, other true superstars. You just don't see him around here anymore because he's back in Sweden. He's not here that often.
Yeah, he's gone, long gone. But, yeah, I mean, he was a great player. Just I wonder where that line is. Like, I when I think of Toronto, and, I mean, obviously I've only been here 9 years, and it's recency bias, like, Wendell Clark comes to mind. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, because I think he just embodied, you know, killer comes to mind. Like, I can't speak for soccer, but obviously soccer's well represented in that list.
Yeah.
And you're right. I miss Kawhi. I don't know how I glazed over it, but
Kawhi's got to be in there.
Yeah,
even
he had
it's just
to
a 1 year. He's got to
right.
be.
Yeah. You're right. But, you know, in looking at it, I felt like because it's such a Leaf rich city too, like I almost feel like Myrtle and them had to be like, okay, we got to, you know, it's got to be a formula here, when really, you know, the way people think in Toronto is all the sports are represented and certainly well respected, but I would think there would be more Leafs on the list.
Well, there are, but it's tough, right? Because like on this list, they've got Silaps and Teeter Kennedy
right.
and Tim Horton. I mean, the Leafs have been around so much longer than the right. Raptors and even the Blue Jays, and the Argos have been around for a long time, but a lot of those early young Argos are not guys that, you know, the average person, someone that's 30, 40, 50 right now would be familiar with.
Agreed.
But, you know, I would also pose this to you. Of the players who are currently playing right now, not guys who have left, and taking Lowry out of the mix, who would be the one guy that you think would have the best chance at going in?
Maybe Matthews.
Yeah, I was going to say probably Matthews. Maybe Siakam because he was on that championship team as well.
Maybe Morgan Riley.
Yeah.
If they win, then you know, you revisit the list. If they don't, then you're like, okay, look at individual awards. And if Matthews wins a Rocket Richard, or, you know, was up for an MVP, you know, kind of has a career path like Sundin, then he makes the list. But mm-hmm. you know, what if he leaves in 4 years?
Well, then that might affect the way the
exactly.
city feels about him. I think that clearly is something we're going to have to handle once we get there.
Yeah.
All right, so Mark Shapiro will join us in 20 minutes. The MLB and MLBPA have come to a conclusion and an agreement on how they're going to go forward here with a postponed season, potentially a canceled season. If it gets to that point, we'll get you more updates from Mark on that and talk about the team itself. I want him, you know, we're going to rapid fire a bunch of players at him, and I want him to tell us, Mark Shapiro, to tell us what he wanted to see out of these players this year in terms of growth. Guys like Bichette, guys like Vladdy, Biggio, Pearson, Jansen, etc. So we'll get to that more with Mark Shapiro in about 20 minutes, and we will get to two battles courtesy of the Overdrive Madness Bracket. We'll get to that next.
I'm having a good time. Not.
Glory, Gloria!
The Overdrive Madness Bracket.
This guy's such an idiot here.
And the Madness Bracket brought to you by Maple Toyota, reminding everyone that we all bleed the Maple Leaf. It's the strength and compassion we share as a community that has and will get us through anything. MapleToyota.com. We're going to begin with the Constipator region. Two battles. one of which is a number one seed. You guys want to guess what this number one seed might be?
Gloria.
It is not Gloria. Hmm. Noodles?
Now I'm trying to think.
There's some beauties, man. We got 64 great clips, so I'm putting you on the spot here.
Did Dwayne Casey make it in there at all?
Casey's coming up here. He is not a one seed, but he will be played in just a moment. This is the number one seed in the Constipator region.
There's an old saying in Tennessee. I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. If fool me, we can't get fooled again.
Is that a one seed or what?
Oh, yeah, every day of the week.
Yeah, an all-time great one seed. I got another one seed that is my favorite clip. I have determined it's my favorite clip. We'll play it in the next hour. But George W. is up against Wayne's World 2.
It's just a chance for the city of Aurora to do something fun and to put the city on the map.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of work.
Oh, well, work is hard.
You're not really listening to me, are you?
Uh-huh.
I mean, I could say anything right now, like you're a complete tool.
Mm-hmm.
But you wouldn't hear it, because you're a freak with a microphone.
Uh-huh.
So that one's good, but it's not anywhere close to George Bush.
No chance.
No, I don't think it's got a shot.
Get rid of him anyway.
Yeah, so... this is our boy, Dwayne Casey, here at the next battle. These are two really quality clips. You know where my allegiance stands, but the second one's a quality one. This is another big battle in the Constipator region.
Always great talking to you, my friend. And like I said, you represent the NBA as far as the sports media is concerned there in Toronto.
I appreciate it. Thanks, buddy. We'll do it again soon. Just two old pals hanging out on
just
the radio.
A joke.
Two buddies that go way back. The voice of basketball
for
in
sports
the city.
Media.
For sports media.
Yep. That's a good point, Brian.
And that one, this one is a sneaky little devil that showed up on our show about halfway through the NFL season.
What happened on the 4th and 9 play call?
Bad call.
Freddie Kitchens just chewing on about 5 pieces of Nicorette gum.
Draw play.
Yeah.
Bad call.
4th and 9 calls a draw. The best thing about that play is that with analytics out there now, almost within, you know, minutes, it was all over Twitter that no one in the history of football had called a draw play on 4th and 9. Literally the first time any coach ever said, you know what's a good idea? 4th and 9 in our own territory, draw play. Why don't we try to run for the first down? And it got stuffed at the line, and just Freddie Kitchens, bad call.
That's chewing awesome. The gum, bad yeah. call.
I don't know if it's going to
be.
Listen to that chewing. I love it.
I don't know if it's going to beat Dwayne Casey, though.
You know where I stand. I mean, I recuse myself from the vote. I refuse to vote for that because I am personally involved in that.
That's a good point, Brian.
Yeah, just, you know, listen, the voice of basketball.
That's a good point, Brian.
The whole country. those are big shoes to fill, but I think I fill them appropriately. Yeah. So that's two of the battles. The next two battles we will get to in the next hour, one of which features my favorite clip, I think, of all time. So we'll get to that. Mark Shapiro will join us in about 10 minutes. So I'm looking forward to catching up with Mark because of this new deal that's been brokered between the MLB and the PA on some of the details that are involved, some of the conditions involved in order for the two sides to come together and start playing. We don't know when they're going to start playing. We'll get Mark to give us some sort of an optimistic and pessimistic view. I guess I want to ask him the opposite end of optimism because Manfred's been talking, Cuban's been talking, and everyone's like, we're hopeful we'll be playing in May. I want to ask him if on any of these calls, the idea of them just completely blowing out the season altogether has come up.
Yeah.
It's pessimistic. It's a dark thought, but I have to believe it likely has at some point.
Well, also, I wanted to kind of ask, like, Bo Bichette sounded a lot more confident than I think kind of us and other people around Toronto about their team. Like, did you not get that vibe?
Yes,
like,
from I did. Him yesterday?
Like, he was like, no, we were going to surprise some people. Like, we're better than people think. Like, I wonder if Shapiro feels that way. You know
well,
what I mean?
Yes, I would assume he probably does. I mean, he's it's his team. I hope he feels more confident than the average person. But there, we talk about projections all the time. Out of Vegas, I think the majority of books had them at 75.5 wins, 76.5. And my understanding is their projections internally are higher than that. Not significantly higher. I don't think they're expecting 90 or 95 wins, but I think they can be a 500 club, if not better than that. And right. that would exceed a lot of expectations out there. So we'll get to Mark Shapiro. Darren Dreger coming up. Two more battles, this time in Al's Brothers Farmers Region. And we'll wrap up the week. Final hour up next. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
This hour has been brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.